con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Apologies again for another delayed start this week, trying not to make it a habit, but as you will see, it was important for us to cover a story that non-league needs to be aware of. First up, I have a community club that has made the national headlines, but you may not have seen it, but you do need to know. Balham FC play in the Combined Counties Premier South, but it's the 20 sides from under 8 upwards and ladies teams that make this football club so successful. Bringing on young talent and young people, which as my guest finance director Derek Fordham explains, is something they are very proud of and want to continue to do, despite the issues they've actually made the headlines with for doing everything right, in my eyes at least. Then we talk football. Old friend of the show, Andy Wing, is in his first season as a full-time boss. His first season at Solihull Moors, and he's made Wembley twice. In a week, too. First up, it's Sunday's prize game against Bromley for a place in the English Football League. Not that you'd be able to tell from the interview, he's one of the game's calmest and nicest managers around. Rounding up the week's non-league news, and there's plenty of it, including breaking news as we recorded, it's John Couch of the non-league paper. There's playoffs. They play a big part along with admin and managerial moves. So it's a bumper package, late to the start line, but hopefully well worth the wait. So sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So despite all the champions, all the playoff buzz, I wanted to start this week with a story that I fear might have slipped under the radar of many. It made the nationals, but as a non-league fan, you probably didn't even read it. As the BBC website reported it, Fulham fined £75,000 over Carvalho rule breach. It hardly leaps out off the screen as a non-league story. But it is. And even with all the furore of promotions, relegations and various administrative nightmares that we will hear about later, I think this is probably the biggest story in non-league this week. Certainly the one with the potential to have the biggest impact. To help me explain, let's give a warm non-league football show welcome to Finance Director at Balham FC, Derek Fordham. Welcome, Derek.
Good morning.
I probably need to set the scene. Balham FC, now of the Combined Counties Premier South in the adult sense. Then in the mid-2010s, a fairly new junior club known as Balham Blazers. A new boy, a young boy arrives to the area, new to the country, joins you guys, attracts plenty of attention in the 3 years he's with you, signs for Fulham Academy, eventually turning pro in 2020 and going on to make his Premier League debut for them before being signed by Liverpool in May 2022. Fabio Carvalho, the player, of course, very excited, but so too, I'd imagine, everybody at the club to see one of their own do well.
That's entirely correct. He's, you know, he always was a really, really nice guy. Right from the time when people like me, who weren't even really coaches, were getting him to dribble in and out of cones, always worked really hard and always was a bit special.
And it's one of those stories that, you know, I talk about. Hollywood need to pick up on non-league stories far more often than the Wrexham story. This is the great story of a young lad coming over from Portugal with his family, needs somewhere to help him, you know, settle into the local community, starts playing football and then makes the rise all the way up, through England schools as well and into the Portuguese under-21 side, Premier League football. That's what we should be talking about, the great bits of how that footballer's dream can become reality from people like yourself.
I completely agree.
And then all the red tape kicks in. Very smartly, I think that the founder of Balham Blazers, Greg Crutwell, spotted the boy's talent back in 2013 when he joined that under-11 side. And I think I've read reports of Chelsea, Arsenal, Man United, Liverpool, lots of people looking at him, but you know, his parents and himself and the club were keen to sort of help deal with all that attention, and new to the country, as I say, maybe limited English. And despite Fabio been in Benfica's setup before, I think the move, he was happy settling, playing for Ballon Blazers. And
that's right. He was with us for 3 years, grew up quite a lot while he was here. It was fortunate that we had a Portuguese-speaking goalkeeping coach, Pedro, who did lots and lots of work, as did Greg and Oli Kanna, who were the two head coaches that we had at the time. And they helped him look at all the different academies. And it really was by coincidence that he ended up at Fulham, although I guess the fact that Greg is a Fulham fan made a difference to that. But it was the best for him. It was the least travelling, and they made him feel most welcome. And let's not forget that they also have a very, very good academy that produces very, very good footballers.
Yeah, and essentially, we don't do this for money. We don't do this for. We do it for the kids, basically, isn't it? That's the reason that we're all involved and put these hours in. But the club did draft, a heads of terms when Fabio moved to Fulham in October 2015. All sides were happy with that. There were various...
It wasn't really anything to do with Fabio. What we had was an agreement whereby Fulham offered that... they would pay us a very small ongoing amount of money for every one of our players that they took as a scholarship fee, really. We're a club that sets our fees to break even. We're never a club that's made a profit, and that's not what we're in it for. And we were very grateful to them for offering us what was a relatively small amount of money. And as a bit of blue sky thinking, other amounts were added on just in case things went the way they did. And I really think it's something that more clubs should be doing. And I think it's something that Premier League and Championship clubs should be allowed to work with, so that money gets down to grassroots football.
And I'll be honest, with my Hayden Yedding United hat on, I've seen probably exactly the same standard agreement from exactly the same club and other clubs, because they want to be able to develop talent that maybe we've spotted first as a community club, but it's in the benefit of everybody that people are working together. But I understand there was an agreement that was drafted by specialist sports lawyers, always happy in the world. I think even when it had to be redrafted when he signed for Fulham, even the FA and the EFL were happy and sort of made aware of the deal.
My understanding was that when the first significant amount of money had to be paid, the FA by then had introduced a system whereby if a club was paying another club, I think probably any club to any club, then that money had to go via the FA. So at that point, they had a look at the original contract, and I'm told by Fulham insisted that we signed a new contract. And by lucky chance, I happened to live in the same street as a very eminent sports lawyer. And so we engaged Charles Russell Speechley. Mm-hmm. To make sure that everything was fine. We are very cautious about anything to do with financial and young footballers, because it's not a very nice world. Once you start getting into large amounts of money, and so we thought it would be very sensible to make sure that we had lawyers involved. And so at that point, at the point when he had made his debut, we then. Had to draft. Well, I believe the FA provided this contract, and with a few tweaks, to make sure that it reflected the original deal. That was then signed by us and Fulham at that point.
And, you know, having been involved with non-league contracts for decades now, it's a standard non-league sort of thing. You know, if a player goes off and makes a debut, or goes off and goes on to play for England, or goes on to play for in the Premier League, or there's a transfer onward clause, it's a standard clause in a non-league contract. And it makes sense that any sort of agreement that's being made, however young people are, that there's similar clauses in there. But the problem is, it falls foul of the Premier League rule U38, I understand, that prevents payments to clubs outside what's really a self-preserving academy system, really. As you say, so Fulham, the payment from Fulham...
The issue was that he didn't have a contract with us. Yeah. Which would have been against the rules, and quite rightly too.
Yep.
So it's absolutely right that those rules are in place to prevent young players of that age having contracts with clubs. And I think this was the first time that these rules had been tested against this sort of thing. If he'd been at Oldham and in some way had been under contract, it would have been no problem at all. Mm. But it was because we had no contract with him that we, I guess, were lumped into the same group as the people that the original sort of Mascherano Tevez rule was introduced to prevent third party ownership of players.
Yeah.
And that's where Fulham have come a cropper.
Yeah, the payment from Fulham to your club when Fabio moves to Liverpool is sort of really triggered it off. Fulham, I think, appealed to the Premier League December 22 and in January 2024, but they've lost both. So hence they've got this fine of £75,000, a 6-month ban from registering any academy players currently or previously registered with another club, ironically, which wouldn't have covered you anyway, because and then that ban suspended for a year from, I think, the 15th of April. And I can hear, actually, to Fulham as a Premier League club, it's probably cost them a lot in legal fees to try and test this and sort of push it. But it's a nothing punishment in terms of Premier League finances, £75,000. But it's the principle for me, and the slippery slope that it reinforces, because, as you say, as a non-league club, as a community club, we can't register players on contracts as early as the pro clubs can. So it almost gives the pro clubs, they've already got a slight advantage, haven't they, over us when you're trying to run a football club with finances. But this, you know, surely every club should agree to pay something towards a club that's helped in the development of a player that they then move on and benefit from.
Well, the thing is, no club wants to hold a player back by either discouraging them from joining a pro club or by generally being hostile to the pro clubs. But this is one of those situations, I guess, where you need to get critical mass. So if you have enough clubs saying that if people want to come and look at their players and if people want to approach their players and if people want to take their players, that there needs to be some sort of agreement in place. And if you get critical mass and every single pro club is coming up against this whenever they approach a club, a grassroots club, then there'll be pressure on these rules to be changed. Mm. And you know, we'll end up with money actually coming down through the ranks. We've had lots of people asking us over the time since Fabio joined Liverpool as to whether we've quote-unquote got our money yet. And again, we're having to be very careful what we say about things. But, you know, there's been the grassroots community has all, I think, been watching to see what happens. And I hope what happens from now on is that they start, instead of, there's a lot of people have talked to us about Chris Smalling and him going from, I forget where he went with it, Maidstone United.
Yeah, yeah.
From Maidstone to Fulham to Manchester United. And I'll take them at their word that Maidstone got nothing, if not very little, out of it. And they all thought that was what was going to happen to us.
Yeah.
And again, it may well be, if we weren't lucky enough to have Charles Russell Speechley on our side, we may well have got nothing.
Club has got that ability, you know, and you know, even people like yourself, you know, a lot of clubs are run on real Yeah, limited people and limited time to sort of even think out of the box that, you know, maybe this might be an issue. So, you know, that's why I wanted to cover the story this week, because it's important, I think, that everybody in non-league, fans, managers, directors, everybody involved, understands that already we're at a disadvantage at our level of the game, yet it is so important. We're told by the FA that things need to sort of stem and be invested in community football. And we just need to make sure that, you know, clubs are protected and also the interests of the players are protected. Because I'm sure, you know, someone like Fabio and the other players, you've had some other great players that have gone on through into the programme. They don't want to be spoken about as some sort of commodity. They want to be spoken about as some sort of, you know, great football god.
That's right. And that's why it needs to become natural, so that you aren't having to argue over a player as if he or she is a commodity. And it just needs to be almost a given that there is some element of funds cascading down. I mean, we are now in a position where our next step is to go out to all of the community, the schools, anywhere in the community that might have space but no money, because we don't have any land or space to build upon. But, you know, we're not an awful long way away from being able to do a community sports hub, you know, proper, more than one 3G pitch, some, you know, other sports, indoor areas, yoga areas, all of this sort of thing. But we need to find the space. And so that's our next step. And that's just because we were lucky enough to have this agreement and lucky enough perhaps to have the right lawyers at the right time.
And lucky enough for you, but lucky enough for the kids and everybody that plays for Balham FC. You know, it was Balham Blazers, now Balham FC. What have you got, 20 age group squads across under-8s to under-18s, a ladies' side?
Boys, girls, ladies, men, everything.
And you're also, you know, competing again this year. I think a second successive ninth place finish in that combined counties Premier South. You're competing against, you know, old friends of this show in Farnham Town, Jersey Bulls. You're playing your home games at AFC Croydon Athletics Mayfield Stadium. That's hard.
Not next season.
Well,
we're tooting. We're off to Tooting and Mitcham,
and a great stadium there as well. I mean,
we are beyond excited, I've got to tell you.
It must be hard though to try and keep that going at that level while also, yeah, your concentration is probably still on the junior sides.
We just tend to have great people in place. We have Jenny Molyneux, who is just a force of nature. I expect every single club has one, a woman that does everything. And it's about a lot of people working really hard. And I did twitch at the beginning of the our conversation when you mentioned first about the fact that we're in the combined counties premier, which we are, but that's only one of our teams. And we don't have a focus on only our first team, men's first team. We have a women's first team, which are going to start moving up through the leagues from now. And we're a club with loads and loads of teams, one of which happens to be the first team. And it's really hard work. Of course, you know it's hard work, and it's important that you also have people who aren't in it for the money. And luckily for us, none of the guys at the top are, and we are absolutely focused on this money only being used for the good of the club, but also with any luck to secure the future of the club forever, rather than be used for the next 5 years for cheap fees and then gone.
Yep. And every week, you know, unfortunately, I have to report on clubs in crisis where they're living hand to mouth and that sort of thing. Whereas, you know, from my perspective, as a lawyer, as a football administrator, as a journalist, as a fan, it looks like you've done everything right as a club in this case, but it's almost left a dirty mark against you. So that's why, the rules appear to be stacked against you, against my club, against every club in the non-league system, really. What have you learned from the whole experience?
I did hope it doesn't look like it's left a dirty mark of essence. It is true that the statement we brought out, we put out the day after it was announced that Fulham had been fined, was that at no stage have we been, has anyone suggested that we've done anything wrong. And those stories, whilst they didn't say that we had done anything wrong, didn't make it clear that we hadn't. Now, whether I think Fulham have done anything wrong doesn't matter, because it's about rules rather than right and wrong. But we certainly aren't being accused in any way of dealing incorrectly with Fabio or with Fulham or you know, with anyone involved. I'm sorry, what was your question?
So it was, what have you learned from the whole experience? Because it's one of those things, it wears you down, these sort of red tape administrative stuff, don't they?
I think I've learned how long it takes to sort something like this out. And it is very, it's lucky I work for myself, and I've spent many hours on it over the last couple of years. I've learned that I know nothing about the law. Almost every time I've come to my own conclusion about what is and isn't right from the point of the law, I've almost always been wrong. And I've learned that every club should try and insist on making sure that they have an agreement like this, because even if you haven't got someone like that at the time, you never know when they might wander up to your training on Clapham Common and ask if they can join in.
Well, what I've learned from our conversation this morning, Derek, is that we're lucky to have people like you involved in non-league. Non-league's lucky for people that all involved at Balham FC and clubs like Balham FC. And actually, we need to continue to be lucky together. And as you say, get this groundswell of support so that people understand the position and just make sure that these rules are slightly tweaked, just so that there's clarity and safety for everybody, so that football can develop for years to come.
Completely agree.
Derek Fordham, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Okay, we spoke with my next guest earlier on in the season, back when his side hit the magic 10-game mark, at which point they were the only side in the top tier still unbeaten. That record didn't last, but the form did, and in his first season managing in the National League, he saw his side secure a playoff spot and are now just one win from the Football League. He's normally one of the calmest people around. To see if that all still stands, let's give a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Solihull Moors, Mr. Andy Wing. Welcome back, Andy.
Hi, mate. Hope you're well.
I'm good. Are you nervous, excited, both?
yeah, I think both, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, excitedly nervous. I think that's the best phrase. But we've done so well to get here. You know, no one expects us to go and win. No one's expected us to get this far. So we're just enjoying it. We're taking each day as it comes, and yeah, we'll just have a right go on come Sunday.
And are you the sort of person who runs through scenarios in your head, keeping you awake at night, or more strategic and planning?
Yeah, 100%. Last few weeks, I don't think I've got past half five in the morning. Every time I wake up, I can't get back to sleep. Funny enough, I was up at half five this morning rewatching the Barnet game for the 100th time this week. So, yeah, everything goes through your head. But in terms of what we do at the training ground, you know, everything's exactly the same. We'll approach the game exactly the same. We know it's going to be really tough, but one we're really, really looking forward to, obviously.
Yeah, and you were pretty safe in the end in that fifth position in the playoffs. And I appreciate you're always keen to finish higher up, you get home draw and avoid the eliminator. But because you had that playoff berth sort of secured a bit earlier, did that enable you to maybe plan better that you're going to have this extended season?
Well, not really. It totally changed, didn't it, on that Sunday after the last game. So, to be honest, we were expecting, obviously, to play Gateshead, whether that was home or away, coming into the York game. So we planned the York game as if we were playing against Gateshead. So the way we set up and everything about that game really was obviously try and win the game, because we wanted to secure a home tie. But our shape and how we pressed off the ball, etc., was was geared up to playing Gateshead, and obviously that flipped on its head the next day. Obviously, I think first and foremost, we're, you know, deeply sorry for Gateshead, their players and their manager, their staff, and, you know, their fans. I wouldn't want to be in their position, but that kind of changed it really. But I think from then on, you know, as soon as we knew we had to play Halifax, which was fine, you know, we just went game to game. And I think that game really helped us. Like I said, after the Barnet game, you know, especially for them, they've had, you know, I think Dean Brennan said after the game, they've been kind of waiting for that game since November, where we've kind of just gone game to game to game to game. We've gone game to game to game. So, you know, we haven't looked too far ahead. We've just looked at the next game. I think that game against Halifax massively helped us in terms of preparing ourselves, you know, the sort of a pressurised game where I said, like, you know, obviously Dean, you know, they're sort of, you know, that they've gone through the whole week and it's all on this one game. You know, probably sometimes you overthink it a little bit, where we've just gone, you know, this is what we're all about. This is what we're going to do. And we crack on for the next game. And that's how we'll approach the next one as well.
And all that kerfuffle with the semi-finals or the eliminators for the playoffs, when that was all that announced, how long was it that you thought you had a buy into the semi-final for?
Well, we're expecting to play on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So we was in on the Sunday. To prepare for the game on a Tuesday. So we're all in. The chairman was in. You know, everyone was in. We had a discussion. Obviously, we heard the news that we were going to get a bye. Brilliant. You know, I'm a big Villa fan, so I went straight to Villa Park after the game against Bournemouth. You know, I was there with my son in my seat. 10 minutes into the game, I get a phone call from the director of football saying, looks like Altrincham are going to get the bye. We're going to play Bromley, apparently, on the Sunday. The winner of Halifax and Solihull, sorry, will play Bromley. Sorry, I've lost my train of thought there. We'll play Bromley because the kids. Yeah. We'll play Bromley on the Sunday after Halifax on the Wednesday, and then obviously 5 minutes later that changed to it being obviously Barnet if the winner plays on Wednesday. And I lost my train of thought for the whole. I didn't want to be there for the first half of the Billy game. And then we were 1-0 down as well, so I was half raging at that. So, but then I think, you know, you just come to the realization, right? Whatever the decision that's been made, whether we're happy with it or not, that's it. We can crack on. So then we had to have the Monday off. Then coming on the Tuesday and play on the Wednesday. So you know, it was. I think it was just for that Sunday. Really, it was kind of difficult because it was back and forth. The players have been told we have Monday off and this is the schedule for the week. Then we go and obviously now you've got to get your head around actually playing on a Wednesday. But I can't thank the players enough. Or, you know, I think their professionalism that kind of Monday, Tuesday to Wednesday was absolutely fantastic. And I think that kind of helped us then sort of back end of the week against Barnet.
Yeah, obviously it comes from the top. But I said you're one of the calmest around. I mean, it's mindset, isn't it? I mean, literally, it sounds and looks like you were able to, well, just reset the switch and you were back in different game mode. And then you go into those games. You've been on fire ever since. 4-2 at home to Halifax in that eliminator. Then 4-0 away at Barnet. And, you know, as you say, they pushed Chesterfield for so long. It was almost as if you were like an Olympic athlete. You're ready, getting ready for those Olympic games, or maybe a boxer to be on peak performance when it matters.
Yeah, like I said, I think because it obviously the game was Wednesday and the sort of turnaround was so quick. We're waiting on 2 or 3 players. They took Knox in the Halifax game, so that was our only concern. Really, we knew what kind of team we wanted to play. If certain players weren't playing, we knew what contingency plans we had in place. And then we kind of, on that Thursday after the Halifax game, we just nothing about Barnet. It was all about recovery. The players are in training or not training, doing what they need to do. Kind of switch off a little bit. I know you can't, but try and just switch off for the game. And then obviously us as staff, we were obviously working behind the scenes in terms of Barnet, etc. And on the Friday, normal Friday, what we usually do, you know, analysis on them, how we can go and win the game. And that was it, really. Kind of, that game, like I said, helped us massively on the Halifax game. One, for goals. Two, for the little scare we had probably second half. Three, the kind of pressurised environment, the kind of late kind of winner, so to speak, from Osborne. And just the nature of the game and the atmosphere was brilliant. And I think that took us into a game on Saturday where we knew we had a great opportunity. We knew it was going to be tough. They're a top, top team. Dean's done a fantastic job. We've played against them a couple of times this season. We nicked two draws really from them. So we knew it was going to be a difficult game. But we just felt, you know, with our best team at this, I mean, we've only really had our best team of the season for the last two games. You know, so coming into this with our kind of our best team that we think is our best team, we knew we've got plenty of options to go and score, nullify their threats. What I think we did, I thought Sabara on Hartigan was, you know, that just stopped them playing, the heartbeat of their team, everything kind of goes through him. Where you look at Bromley will be Cheek. We stopped Hartigan playing. We kind of stopped them playing, and we're really good in transition on the counter attack with our front four. Osborne through midfield, kind of making late runs. We work our socks off the ball as well. You know, for how good they are going forward, our front four, they work incredibly hard off it as well. So, you know, the game plan works, and obviously now looking forward to a massive game on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday 3 o'clock then. Wembley turf probably more slippery than normal. What's it going to mean to you to walk out with your side? The smells, the sounds, the sights.
Yeah, obviously I've been saying to the players for the last 2-3 months. I had a relatively boring career.
It was.
I'm remembered for a last goal at Highfield Road. That's pretty much sums it up, really. But like, I didn't have it. I played 400 league games. I didn't have any promotions, no relegations. So at least that was a bonus. No real playoff kind of runs. I was involved in a couple of, like, obviously Oxford got promoted just after I'd retired. Brighton got promoted when I was kind of in and out, that weren't really in the team. So I'll just say we've got a massive opportunity. I've had a 20-year career or 18-year career, whatever it was, and didn't really get a sniff of anywhere near Wembley, and a lot of players don't. So we just said it was a great opportunity, and the players have given themselves that opportunity. So to go and actually do it now, look, we haven't achieved anything yet. We've not won anything yet. We've got to Wembley, but you know, it's going to be great for me personally, for my family, friends, the players, family, friends, the club, everyone associated with the club. And yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
And as you say, most people never get to Wembley once in their lives. You've got to do it twice in a week. Have you just put that one out of your mind completely, though?
The sole focus is Bromley on the football pitch, regardless of, you know, where the stadium, etc. You know, I think when we play Bromley away, you're concerned about the pitch and you're concerned about going there anyway. So it's the same type of thing in terms of playing them at Wembley. But, you know, we're just looking at a game of football, how we can stop them, how we can go and hurt them, how we can go and win a game of football. And we'll just focus on that. And, you know, I think we'll have a walk around Wembley the night before just to get familiarised with it. We'll rest up and go from there.
Yeah, and such is football. You know, I'm talking to you ahead of a massive game, potential promotion. I'm sort of still suffering from my own clubs having relegation, and indeed, you know, your two most recent clubs, I guess, you mentioned Oxford United, they're in the League One playoffs. Coventry City have had a great season as well, but Banbury United, though, relegated. You're the sort of guy. You must speak to all these people, all old friends. Do those conversations sort of in the last week have to be sort of almost unemotional because you've got the focus on these games ahead?
Yeah, a little bit. Still speak to people from all those clubs. I the biggest thing for me is like everyone saying, oh, well done, congratulations. And you kind of have to stop them right there. We're like, well, congratulations for what? We haven't done anything yet. That's probably the biggest thing we've had to stop, in terms of just you know, obviously calming people down and they give it that one, whatever happens on Sunday. You've done a fantastic job. And, you know, that for me, that's a load of rubbish. If we lose on Saturday, we've ultimately failed in what we not, you know, obviously at the start of the season, no one expected us. So in terms of that, we haven't failed, but when you get this far, you want to go all the way. So, conversations like that have been halted quite quickly in terms of, well done, give yourself a pat on the back. You know, I'll give myself a pat on the back if we get promoted. That's about it at the moment.
And you seem to have settled quite well back into full-time football. I think the last time we spoke, you were praising the team around you because of the, in a way, being a full-time gaffer with all that support around you actually had, gave you more time to focus on one thing. Do you think that maybe a model that more part-time clubs, you know, should be looking to hybrid maybe to create success? Is it better to have a full-time manager?
Potentially, but I think hybrid's really hard. I know quite a few clubs. I think Hereford did it for a year. I don't think it really worked for them. But I'm not sure if Boston have done it this year, so it might be interesting to see how it went for them. I know obviously Dorking tried it, didn't they, this season with Mark White. I'm not too sure if that really works, to be perfectly honest, in terms of work and or et cetera around it. But maybe having a full-time manager, potentially, that helps, you know, especially, you know, I was doing sort of three jobs last year, 6 days a week, four or five evenings a week. You know, I found that really tough. Where this year, you know, you can solely focus on one thing, you know, to get it spot on how you want to get it. Obviously, it was a learning curve the first 2-3 months, but as soon as you get used to it, and you know how the players want to work, the kind of routine the players want, you know, it's obviously worked really, really well so far, and hopefully we can keep that going.
Yeah,
obviously Sunday and obviously next season.
Yeah, the playoffs as well. I just wanted to ask you because those that finished second in the National League and National League North, National League South, haven't progressed through to the final. You're going to tell me it's wonderful these playoff things, but at the start of the season as a manager, would you rather not have to play in the playoffs?
100%. You know, a couple of years ago, we with Banbury, we won the league by 20 odd points, pretty much had it wrapped up by sort of February time, really. So it was, you know, I can see how Chesterfield have been feeling the last couple of months. You know, I've seen a few photos the last 2 weeks as we're sort of ready to go into battle in the playoffs there on the beach and in Marbella or wherever they've been. And you're kind of a tad bit jealous of that. But, you know, obviously, if you're not going to win the league, you know, everyone always says it's the best way to go up during in the playoffs. You have that kind of, you know, nervous tension with the games leading up to the final. If you win the final, you know, they say it's the best way to go up. But, you know, anyways, to go up would be unbelievable, an achievement. We're desperate to do it. You know, the chairman, you know, the sort of hard work and money he's put in over the years. You know, the community, the football, the fans growing all the time. Still a relatively young club, 17 years old, really. So it would be a monumental effort, monumental achievement for everyone associated with the football club. Yeah, so we're just looking forward to the game now and, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, those sliding door moments. When Solihull Moors was formed from the merger, so was Hazen Yedding that same season. We played a pre-season friendly, and as I say, you're knocking on the door to get out of step one, and we're going through the trapdoor back to step four. But anyway, that's football.
You'll be back.
The setup at Solihull Moors, probably second to, well, few even in the National League and Football League. You must feel confident then that if promotion is achieved, the club can push on further, yeah, quite quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had a few interviews this week, and everyone's saying, "Oh, Bromley are ready. Bromley are, their infrastructure's brilliant." Well, I'm like, well, it's one, you're supposed to be talking about us. Two, have you been to our training ground and ground? Our training ground is second to none. The facilities, the sort of the infrastructure there, the staff we've got in place, the players we've got in place, you know, stability now. You know, I think we're more than ready. We were at the football club, we were ready 2 years ago. It probably just wasn't our time then. I was sort of an outsider looking in then, and I was, you know, knowing the sort of history and the sort of size of the club, you kind of think, well, have they had their chance? But, you know, when you're in the football club and how hard people work and the ambition they've got to strive going forward, we know we're ready, the football club's ready, you know, if that chance arises, and hopefully that does on Sunday.
Well, Andy Wing, I know you've got lots to organise. New suit, or are you tracksuit boy this year?
I have been wearing my tracksuit, but I was told I wasn't allowed to in the playoffs, so I had to quickly nip to M&S and buy a jumper. So I'll probably be going smart cash in what I've done for the last two games.
Good stuff. Well, Andy Wing, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Time then in the week to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. It's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Executive editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, Mr. John Couch.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. I've mentioned the relegation once already this programme, so I'll mention it again. It's hard. I don't know if it's sunk in yet. You know, you have good seasons, you have bad seasons. That's what non-league's all about. I remember ribbing fans of certain clubs who had always been for that mid-table obscurity, hadn't really won anything, hadn't really sort of been relegated. Speaking of Andy Wing, actually, earlier, and he was saying that about him as a player. He never really won anything, never got relegated. Perhaps as a non-league fan, it's more exciting to go up and go down, isn't it? That's the wonders of the pyramid.
Yeah, you're right. It's non-league football all over. I mean, I talk as a supporter of Ipswich Town, we are the kings of winning nothing, and basically our whole existence being shrouded in disappointment. And then once in a blue moon, you get a year like we've had, and we're on the verge of the Premier League, which I still can't believe now. But after many years of supporting my various local clubs or whatever, I know it really is ups and downs. And you know, for every bit of success, there's a team going through disappointment. So yeah, I do feel for you, Tim. But he's in a huge club. They'll be back. I'm sure you've got a good man in charge there now, and you know, hopefully a little bit of stability. And this time next year, you could be an altogether contrasting mood.
Indeed. And I have to say, this close season, it just gets busier and busier if you're administrator at a football club. But I would guess probably even more so for those clubs that are in the playoffs. You have a massive weekend for playoffs. Bank holiday weekend, obviously, so they can stretch them across the 3 days. But that's probably a bit more of a headache for you guys at the non-league paper, isn't it? Let's have a look. We've got what's... beginning on Friday night, we've got one of the Step 4 playoffs, the Isthmian South East, Three Bridges against Chichester City, and then all the way across. I mean, the National League, we've got the big game. We spoke to Andy Wing earlier. Bromley against Solihull Moors, third against fifth. Wembley, 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Looks like it might be a bit damp there, but what a game for everybody involved in that match.
Huge game. I watched Solihull very, very recently. It was really, really impressive of them. They tore apart an excellent Ipswich side who had a lot to play for with relative ease. And then the semi final against Barnet. Wow, that was mightily impressive. You know, to go and beat the second best team in the league 4-0. 4-0 on the road. Yeah, they really showed what they're about. And then we watched Bromley take on Altrincham last Sunday. They went 1-0 down to a very Altrincham side, and managed to claw their way back, 3 goals in 9 minutes to turn the tables. And they looked equally impressive too. What you've got here is two sides who much at the peak of their powers at the moment, and they're going to be going at each other, hammer and tongs. And I think we're in for exceptional final. Two teams who play the right way as well. And, you know, hopefully it'll be a really good advert for the National League on the biggest stage of them all. I really can't pick a winner. I think it's great also that there's two proper non-league teams in there. You know, this is a final between two teams whose history is entirely based centered around non-league football. There's no football league history there. So they're creating history for themselves, and I think it's great to have two clubs like that. And it boosts the idea of three up, three down as well. So anything that can enhance that argument is fine by me. But I think we've got two great sides and a really, really good occasion. Not sure I could pick a winner, as I say, but really looking forward to it. Should be a cracker.
I mean, that's probably the same across all of those National League playoffs, if not all the playoffs anyway. But on the Saturday, 3:30 p.m. kickoff, Brackney Town against Boston United in the National League North, place in the National League. And National League South on Monday, 3 o'clock, also on TNT Sports. Worthing against Braintree Town, again, third against fifth there. So all three of those National League playoffs are on TNT Sports. That Worthing-Braintree game as well as a sellout. So, I've been sure there'll be plenty of people grateful that there's got TV coverage there. Interestingly, though, I mentioned this to Andy Wing earlier, that the second place side in all of those National League playoffs haven't made it through to the final.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it was a very strange day, wasn't it? Last weekend with the eliminators, all the away teams winning. Hence our front page headline: Away the lads. It was a really interesting day. Very, very unusual that and three away winners, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got a very different outlook really to those playoffs. Just kind of thought United they'll be kicking themselves, weren't they? And Boston United have done great to win through two away games to get to the final. The National League North, but the player haven't really kicked in yet. I think one goal, I think, so far in four games. They're really, really cagey affairs. But Brackney and Boston, that they both like to play the right way, and hopefully we can get a nice, a good entertaining game on Saturday. It's our only major, I say major, it's our only playoff final from steps one and two on Saturday, which doesn't fall great for the non-league paper, but we'll be there at St James's Park, and really hope that we can get a really good, entertaining game to report on for you.
Yeah, and interestingly, although the second place side hasn't made it through in the National League, you then drop down to step three of the four divisions there, and each of those is the second place club hosting the third place club. So in the Northern Premier League Premier, you've got Macclesfield Marine on Monday. Also on Monday, you've got the Isthmian Premier, Chatham Town against Enfield Town. Southern Premier Central also on Monday. AFC Telford United against Leamington. And then the Southern League Premier South, Tottenham against Salisbury. So second against third there. Does that maybe suggest that the National League is maybe slightly tighter, and maybe there should actually be a bigger push for more coming up from step three rather than just the one champion and then one via the playoffs, if second and third have made it through to these playoff finals?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, playoffs, everyone says they're a lottery, but I think if you're the high with that home advantage, it usually means that it usually gives you that big advantage that you deserve, really. I think the system's quite fair in that respect, but possibly. I mean, in most of the if not all of the step three leagues, I think on the flip side, if you look at step four, you look at poor old Ramsgate, who have been leading the way in Isthmian South East pretty much all season. They scored over 100 goals, been absolutely tremendous, and then they slip up at home to Chichester City. I think we're 21 points behind them in the league, in the league standings. I mean, those things happen, unfortunately, in playoff. But more often than not, as you pointed out, the home sides will prevail. And I think in all four of those step three divisions, I think they're four really, really good finals. And whoever take their place at step two next year, I will be there on merit.
Yeah, it's a very exciting weekend. Also at step four, then you've got Northern Premier East, Stockton Town, Dunstan second against third, Saturday 7:30 p.m. Northern Premier Midlands, Saturday 3 p.m. Yeah, Anthony Nomads second against Harborough Town, third place again. Northern Premier West, Saturday the third. 3 p.m. Prescott Cables, who were third, playing fifth place City of Liverpool. Ispian North, Saturday again, 3 o'clock. Bowes and Pitsey were fourth against Brentwood Town, who were fifth. Ispian South Central, Sunday, 3 o'clock kickoff. Marlow, who were second against Leatherhead, who were third. That one that you mentioned, Ispian South East, it's a Friday night kickoff, 7:45. Three Bridges, who were fourth against Chichester City, of fifth. And Southern League Central, Monday, 3 o'clock. Bedford Town, who were second against Waltham Abbey, were fourth. And then the Southern League South, Monday, 3 p.m. Froome Town, who was second against Bristol Manor Farm, who finished fourth in the overall table. What I did like seeing across the semi-finals is that the playoffs, they still grab the imagination of the fans and, well, help clubs bolster the coffers, I guess, because attendances, looking just at the Isthmian Premier semis on Wednesday evening, we had 3,000 at Chatham, 2,225 at Enfield Town, and in step four, Isthmian North, there were, 1,122 at Bury Town, at that Ramsgate game you mentioned. There were 1,400 people there. And at Leatherhead, over 1,000 people there. So, yeah, playoffs, they are a lottery, but I suppose that they help. You know, it's a bit like non-league day, isn't it? Non-league day a second time around for those that are involved.
Yeah, very much so. And I think the fans in general love playoff football. I think it's a pure cup tie atmosphere. It's going to be decided on the night, and I think the impressive thing about all those attendances is the fact that people have had such a short amount of time to organise themselves and get on down there. Obviously, the season finishes on the Saturday, and the playoffs begin on the Tuesday and Wednesday. The following week. So, the fact that the clubs have, those home clubs have been able to prepare for a playoff semi-final and fans in their thousands have turned up at last minute to support their hometown club, I think is absolutely tremendous. And, as you say, we've had some really, really good attendances right through step two through to four. The step one attendances never ceased to amaze us either, did they? But it's been tremendous, and to see some of those figures, down on step four and even step five, I've seen the four attendances. That's amazing. We didn't have that. We didn't have that a few years ago, and it just goes to show that the lure of non-league football, I think, for the everyday football fan. I don't think there were as many Premier League glory hunters as there used to be. I think a lot of people have been attracted to non-league and they like what it's about.
Yeah, and talking,
really shows you that's what we're. We wanted to do that's our aim, isn't it?
It is just to get more people excited about the playoffs and a non-league football in general. And really, it would have been nice this week if we were talking about in the build up to non-league finals day on Saturday 11th about the wonders of the Essex Senior League providing. The two finalists in the FA Vars, but unfortunately, the focus has probably been more on this pending league committee meeting. We're speaking Thursday afternoon. There should be a decision maybe Thursday evening concerning Saffron Walden, who played three matches in the league whilst under a suspension imposed by the Essex County FA that later came to light, basically, it's having an impact now on the playoffs, which hasn't been helped by Wednesday night. Great Wakering were due to play FC Clacton, but the latter were unable to raise a team. So presumably that one will then be also be decided by a committee as a walkover, 3 points going to Great Wakering. If they get those 3 points, at the moment, Great Wakering aren't in the playoffs in the Essex Senior League, but if they get the 3 points from Clacton and also the 3 points from their match against Saffron Walden, that would then put them in the playoffs. So the playoffs have now been suspended until pending this committee decision. And of course, I know in many other cases where points or there's decisions made by committees, the points are taken off the sinning club and not necessarily given to the club that was sinned against. But I think in this case, there's a legal argument that maybe because Saffron Walden shouldn't have played the game, they weren't able to effectively put a team up. So then that would be a walkover. So I think that's what Great Wakering Rovers are maybe hoping for. All before their biggest game ever in their history, at Wembley against Romford next weekend in the FA Vars final. It's never easy being an administrator of a league, is it?
No, it isn't. It must be every league administrator's nightmare when situations like this pop up. There seems to be one every year, but this year just seems to be worse than I can remember. Obviously, we had the debacle with Gateshead and then Harbour losing points and Mickleover losing points, and there was various situations which situations with the weather as well. Yeah, that's hindered playoffs because teams still have plenty of league games still to play, and those teams might still have a run into the playoffs. It's been an administrative nightmare. The Sackville Morden Town situation is a little bit mind-boggling at the moment. Not quite got my head around it. It seems very strange that the Essex FA and the Essex Senior League haven't got their houses in order, really.
Yeah.
To be able to strategically plan this, but I'm not even sure what they've done, but it's all a little bit messy, really.
Well, we are where we are, aren't we?
The players and fans.
I think, as we've been reporting in recent weeks, where everybody's rushing to try and make sure that all these games get on, and we understand why, and we've discussed that, because there's so much else to be done, even once these games are finished. So I saw somebody asking this week, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't tongue-in-cheek, asking when the fixtures are out, and the fixtures for this competition still haven't finished, this season. But, people want everything done every 5 minutes, don't they? It needs to be done immediately. I'm just now looking to see that the Essex Senior League have just literally come out with a decision on a league statement. So I'll read that. Following today's hearing, panels has agreed not to award points for the two league games in question. They've agreed that points are going to be deducted from Saffron Walden Town and a financial penalty put on the club. Great Wakering Rovers have also advised that they want to focus on the FA Vars final and have therefore decided to appeal the decision. So those Essex Senior League playoff semi-finals now go ahead on Friday. So we're talking Thursday afternoon, and now these clubs, you say, John, earlier about clubs organising these games very quickly. Woodford Town hosting Sporting Bengal and Romford hosting Barking. They've got to put these games on and then play these games in the playoffs. It's just a mad world, and I don't know if we can take some learnings from this next year. We've also got in the Eastern Counties playoff final, there was an ineligible player played earlier on the season that has cost Thetford Town. They've been pulled out of the final, but I think they're looking to appeal that. And it's all to do with, I think, FA computer systems really not linking up, still not maybe fit for purpose. I know from my own experience that if there's a typo, if there's a player uses a hyphen in his name at one point and doesn't the next time, then it creates a new record for him and it doesn't always link up. So you don't know if they're banned or not. It just adds to the stuff that we can talk about, I guess, but also the stuff that we have to try and get our heads around, John.
Yeah, absolute minefield. And it doesn't help also that this is the first year of playoffs at step 5 and 6, because it's all very new to a lot of clubs. And, you know, as you say, if computer systems aren't updated to handle a situation like this, then I think it is something that we need to look at. It just seems to me that there's a lot of problems at the moment. You know, we just reeled off 4 or 5, you know, in 1 year alone, and it's just the players and the fans I feel sorry for, and the poor guys, people like yourselves who have to run club administration. It sounds like an absolute nightmare, a real minefield, and I just hope that that it is a few teething problems this year, and that things are ironed out a little bit more next year. But I wouldn't mind betting that there'll be more problems somewhere along the line next year. It's not one thing or another, and appeals don't help as well, do they? Cause no. The appeals, and that pushes it all back again, and you know, everyone's in limbo. No one really knows sort of what happens, and what lengths of time it takes to realistically get these things over the line. And it really is a nightmare. And, but it sounds like the Essex Senior League have managed to sort of get a house in order, really, and at least people can start knowing where they stand now, and they can get these playoffs out of the way, and they can then look forward to an all Essex FA Vars final, which they're no doubt revel in and deserve as well, because that great Ray Pumovers versus Romper will be an absolute cracker at Wembley.
Yeah, and it does look like, it sounds like they've actually come to a practical solution there, and talking to all the clubs involved and finding the best route forward for football. So a round of applause to them for that. And similarly, the Northern Counties East Division 1 playoffs, they came up with a practical solution as well. There were weddings and cricket at the intended venues mean that both of their playoff semi-finals have had to be moved to neutral venues, but it's done very quickly, very, very well organised. Beverley Town against Retford United is now going to be played at Winterton Rangers FC, and Shirebrook Town against Wakefield FC is now going to be played at Parkgate FC. But it's great to find all the clubs working together, all the league working together, just so they can play these games, and we can begin talking about football again.
Yeah, I'm guessing this is the problem of grounds that have either sort of council owned or whatever. You know, that football have it until the end of April, and from May onwards, then it's cricket and weddings and whatever. So if you manage to find yourselves in the playoffs and you haven't got those terms and conditions in place, then it could be a problem. But that's non-league football, that's why we love it. You know, out go the nets and in come the cricket squares, and it's a whole new ball game.
Well, literally a whole new ball game.
Part and parcel, I think. Part and parcel. As I say, that's what we love. That's why we love non-league football, and technically we are in the cricket season, so we should really sort of come to expect it. But it's when it turns around again in August when it gets interesting.
Yeah, indeed. Talking of interesting stories, Ebbsfleet United FC have been granted planning permission for an 8,000 capacity stadium which looks like they're just expanding the footprint of the ground, maybe an overlap of the current site, and make a 90-degree turnaround of the pitch. As usual, lots of flashy graphics. Hopefully, something will come from that. In terms of they're a club that were in crisis, I guess, a number of times, but are now sort of back on the way up. This week we saw Loughborough Dynamo asking for voluntary relegation, moving out of step four, and suggesting that he might just go back to maybe even outside the pyramid as a grassroots club. And this week, it is the close season, as I say, very, very busy. It's the week where many managers are meeting with their chairman or the board, finalising budgets, targets. But again, spare a thought for Kevin Mayer at Southend United. Without that 10 points deduction, they may very well have been preparing for a playoff final instead of Andy Wing or Andy Woodman this weekend. But instead, I know that he's going to be preparing as professionally as possible. There still seems to be a big cloud of uncertainty hanging over Roots Hall. Southend United, there's a very long article in The Guardian, also available online on Thursday, about where Southend are now. The latest winding up hearing has been adjourned until mid-May, as we reported a couple of weeks back, and how they got to this situation is well worth the read. Even for those that have been following proceedings closely, it does give you a sort of an overview and the twists and turns and the different characters involved, and just gives you a reminder of what they've all been through at Roots, or even in this last season. And again, they're not going to be the only club that are on the precipice or got difficulties. You know, until some of these league reconstitutions, the drafts are back out, there may still be some clubs that decide that, you know, maybe the travel, the costs of the league that they're in are too much. There are still more twists and turns to come in the AGM once we got through these playoffs.
Yeah, we've had a season there, haven't we? Starting with Southend, and then sort of moving down into, there was Rochdale as well, Torquay, and then early in the season with East Thurrockham and Mannington Borough, of course. And this week, now we've got Loughborough Dynamo and New Salamis as well. Another team who sadly pulled out. It's not been a great season for it, and it is very worrying. I'm not sure there's a solution. I think it's just management of clubs, but it's very, very difficult and very expensive to run a football club in senior football these days. And if you're a team like New Salamis, it's play on a neutral ground without a massive fan base, then it's very, very difficult to be able to compete at that level. It's a good standard of football, and travelling and what have you, equipment, kit, ground hire, it all adds up. It's not easy. Southend United is a little bit worrying, because obviously we spoke earlier in the year, and I remember that week when it was all agreed, and it seemed that the nightmare was over and Southend could finally kick on, but they just haven't, have they? Nothing has really been finalised or agreed. Same old characters are still there, and the rumours are still flying around, and fans won't be happy really until everything is all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. It's just hasn't happened at the moment, and that cloud is going to be hanging over them until it is finalised. And it's the fans I feel sorry for. They've had an absolutely tremendous season on the pitch. I think if it wasn't for that 10-point deduction, they would have finished fourth. They would have been strong playoff contenders, and who knows, they could have ended up back in the Football League. But what would have happened then? I don't know. That would have been another administrative debate, I think, if Southend United were playing in this week's promotion final after what happened with Gateshead. Who's to say that the UFL would have accepted them? Who knows? But unless it is finalised pretty soon, that decision could be, again, could end up costing Southend United. And I really, really hope it doesn't, because I just hope that everyone wants football to be decided on the pitch. And, you know, hopefully they can have a summer to sort things out and start afresh next year and hopefully be a promotion contender again.
Yeah. And, hopefully they will be able to build on that, and Kevin will be able to build his squad and, you know, push on even more for next season. Some big managerial moves again this week. It is the end of the season, so you expect maybe some to-ing and fro-ing. Some big name managers looking to have, well, probably more relaxing summer holidays than normal. I'm looking at Robbie Nightingale stepping down after 8 years as manager of Cambridge City. John Underwood out at Beaconsfield Town after their relegation. Mark Stimpson with a similar result for a similar reason at Margate. You mentioned Michelover Sports earlier. We saw John McGrath and his team leave, I think, before the playoff semi-final after 8 very successful years there. Also, at Plymouth Parkway, old friend of the show, Lee Hobbs as well. He's taken a step back there. And I just wonder whether these managers have just had such a hard season as to how quickly they will be bouncing back and getting back in the dugout.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we the two you mentioned there, Lee Hobbs and John Underwood. Obviously, this is Plymouth Parkway and Beaconsfield who played each other in a real crunch game on Saturday, didn't they? And it was a case of whoever won through would stay up, the other would go down. It was that tight. And in the end, it was a 1-1 draw, and they both ended up going. Which is, I think, it just goes to show the stresses that managers come under these days. John Underwood said that his decision to leave was made a few weeks ago, and I'm sure Lee Hobbs, after 7 years in charge at Plymouth Parkway and getting them from step 5 to step 3 and the highest position they've ever achieved as a senior football club, that's a long time. And I think it takes its toll after a while, and after a long hard. You know, I'm sure those guys will really enjoy putting their feet up, going on a holiday and refreshing a little bit and pressing the reset button, and then coming back next year, because they both done tremendous jobs wherever they've been in the past. And they'll certainly, I don't think they'll be long out of their game, them too. And as you mentioned, other big name managers as well. Mark Stimpson at Margate, disappointing season they had, but Mark Simpson's been there, done it, and again, he's a good football man, and won't be out of a job long. There's some big names out there, and I think the managerial merry-go-round, I think, it's only just starting to turn. I think there'll be a few more over the next few weeks. That's what keeps non-league paper going and keeps me in the job. So,
well, yeah, I mean, obviously, after we went to air last week, you reported at the weekend the departure of Kevin Phillips at Hartlepool, and we've seen this week the differences in stories from about that from the manager and club, and in goes Darren Sile there, which another big name manager. Elsewhere this week, we've seen Jamie Coyle back in the dugout at Whitstable in the Scaffold Premier, assisted once again by his number two from their time at Ramsgate, Matt Longhurst. And we've seen Mark Bauer as well back at Guiseley. And at Kingstonian, Tutu Henrique departed. And as we discussed a couple of weeks back, former Wharton and Hersham boss Scott Harris is back already, unveiled as their new boss following their relegation down to step 4. So we're... Scott Harris at Kingstonian, could that be the man that they need to get back to their former glory?
Yeah, delighted for him. Absolutely delighted for him. And what an appointment that is as well. I mean, Kingstonian are a club that, you know, not a lot has been going for them for quite some time. They need an appointment like that. Someone just to galvanise a little bit of excitement and togetherness among the supporters. And who better than Scott Harrison? He's been, you know, taken Wharton Hersham from step 6 through to step 3. He's a former Cays player himself. His dad was a former manager his dad Kim, and I was in charge at Case not so long ago, about five seasons ago, I think. And so it's inbred in the family. He's dead keen to kick on. I've seen a lot of comments from a lot of people that have dealt with Scott in the past, and all of a sudden people are talking about Kingstonian again, whereas they haven't been for so long. Fell out of step three, didn't they, after about 15 years, I think, at step three. They've found themselves now in step four. They're still homeless, and the future looked pretty bleak for this real famous football club. But I think but having Scott Harris in there, all of a sudden, it's given everyone a lift, and hopefully it can turn it around fortunes there at Kingstonian. I'm delighted for Scott, and I think as an appointment, that was as good as they could have made. And I wish him all the best, and it'll be nice to see Kingstonian back as a force again.
Yeah, one other bit of news this week that we saw from the National League Board. It was about written resolutions from the National League Board, but announced via the Dagenham and Redbridge website, that the National League have confirmed two changes to the way the game will be played in the National League for the 24-25 season. They'll be able to use five substitute players at any time in a match, naming a maximum of seven substitutes. So, as we've seen elsewhere, higher up the pyramid in various competitions. Also, those Christmas and Easter fixture schedules where normally at Christmas the club will play home and away against the same opposition. They're trying to spread that around just in case there's a one team in form and one team not in that close time frame. So the Boxing Day fixtures will be swapped around with Good Fridays. You play the same person on Boxing Day as you do on Good Friday, and New Year's Day and Easter Monday having a similar correlation. So interesting moves there, and maybe one that we might see the other leagues across the pyramid follow too, because they seem to make sense.
Yeah, possibly. I'd like to see where this this kind of went under the radar a little bit with me. I've not seen it confirmed anywhere. It was all released a little bit. What I'm looking for?
Informally.
It was all just a bit strange in the way it was released, wasn't it? It was just something not quite right about it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being sceptical after the last few weeks we've had with National League. it would be interesting. But certainly the substitute law is one that managers have pushed for a long time. It's a long, hard season, and it's a good way, naming seven substitutes and be able to play five is a good way of bringing young players through the club as well, which is always a positive. And especially in times when they play so many games and you get so many injuries, and to have those extra two places on the bench would is development of a young player, even if they just sit on the bench. But that's brilliant. I think that will go really, really well. The Christmas and New Year fixtures, I've seen a few negative comments against it, I must admit. It's that makes my Christmas, having a big local derby, home and away, Christmas, Boxing Day and New Year's. I do understand the need for to try and sort of spread it around a little bit, and give clubs the highest possible chance of a big bank holiday home gate. I get that, but I think this is a tradition against football moving forward. So I can see pros and cons on that front as well. I just wish we had something a little bit more concrete to work on. The way it's been released is just a bit strange.
In the modern era, when we've got so many different routes of channels, communications, and you and I normally have the mobile numbers of pretty much everybody that we need to get hold of, and they're trying to confirm information is proving very difficult. So this weekend as well, Monday, May the 6th, we've got this England C match. England C against Nepal at Aldershot Town. We we mentioned it a few weeks back. There's not really a lot more information that we know about it. Is that we've had a squad, but we always know that that's always very variable and could change. We'd urge people to get down to Aldershot Town just because it should be a great day and a great celebration of football. But it would be nice to know more about it.
Yeah, that's right. Another occasion that's gone under the radar. Especially at this time of year when, you know, football season has finished, you think there'd be something. Hold on, guys, you know, the season's not finished yet. We've still got England C against Paul. We've got the top players from the National League and step two playing for England. We playing against the Nepal side that we've never played against before, and you know, at Aldershot Town, which is a good tradition, home of lower league football, and a question really of what makes English football so great, but nothing. No, you're right. It's gone very, very quiet. I feel for Paul fair enough and his staff. Mm. I know the work that goes on behind it. All we can do as pressman Tim is continue to bang the drum, and if you're around on Bank Holiday Monday, it'll be a real cracker down at the EBB Stadium. England have got a really, really good squad of players, plenty of talent on show. And as I say, we don't know a lot about the Nepalese, but they're certainly going to come with a lot of threat. I mean, there's a couple of individual players that have been banded about this season in this country. So I think it'll be a cracking afternoon's entertainment. If the FA can't beat the drum, then we'll try. So, you know, hopefully we can get a big crowd down there and help cheer England C, because England C is an institution that needs a little bit of luck. And you know, certainly gets love from the press, and I think with a little bit of a boost, we can help get England C more regular football, and I think that will benefit everyone.
Yeah, I'm not only banging the drum, I'm setting up a full orchestra here. England C, very important, as is the non-league paper. At the moment, everything that we've gone through, and we've run out of time, is by the time the non-league paper hits my doorstep, I'm going to be tripping over it because it's going to be that full of stuff. Anything else we've missed out that might be in this weekend's non-league paper?
We've got loads. I think if we could double in size, we would do this week. It's just one of those weeks. We've got plenty of playoff action first and foremost. Previewing the games from Sunday and Monday as well. That's step one. Right through to step four, then the step five playoffs. We're continuing with that. We've got five live step five finals on Saturday. Seven, I think, from step six as well. So there is still plenty of football to be played. Obviously, then now we're talking about England City. Of course, on Monday, Adam Virgo is going to be giving us his team of the decade. He's been at TNT Sports now for 10 years.
He's not that old, is he? Surely not. Team of a decade? He's not been around that long.
By all accounts, yeah. He doesn't look old enough, does he? But he's got his team of the decade. So there's a couple of interesting inclusions in there. So we're looking forward to that. But plenty on. Action packed. It's probably the busiest week I think we've had at non-league paper towels for a long, long time. So, we're absolutely, absolutely shattered. We're just going to go and finish it off for the next last couple of days and put our feet up for the bank holiday. I think we deserve it too.
You definitely have deserved it. John Couch, thank you for all of your time, all of your efforts, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Many thanks. Cheers, Tim.
And then that is it for this week. Apologies again for the delay in the pod going out, but it was important to try and get as much information in as possible and work around those interviewees. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
Colossal monster tearing through the streets. A city in ruins. Nowhere to hide. Until he finds a way out behind the wheel of the all-electric Toyota CHR. Instant torque, getaway handling, and immeasurable wow factor. John Cho stars in Escape. Experience the thrill. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family at your local dealer. Toyota, let's go places.